Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. After a very fun and very stylistically appropriate opening night to DM Theatrics' Final Curtain, The Last of Ed Wood, I sat down with director Frank Zhivklik in the front row of the Red Room to talk about his mini-festival putting five Ed Wood films on stage. Take a listen. Congrats.
Thank you.
Super fun.
It was terrifying because we... Tonight was actually the first time it ran with full tech.
Oh, really? No.
Oh, yeah. I've done that before. I've done that with I've been in Downtown Theater almost 15 years now. I've done that a lot.
So no tech rehearsal time.
No. Well, we had tech rehearsal time. We spent the entire weekend trying to fix things that were broken and trying to resolve issues with shows that were happening because it's five shows.
Yeah.
And we spent about a 3.5 month rehearsal process, but still. Are we rolling it?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Whatever.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't wasting anything you could use. Okay.
No.
It's been a 3 month process of putting these together, and you'd think it'd be enough, but then you realize it's five shows.
At least an hour length, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're all about... the shortest one is Violent Years. I think it's probably going to run about 35 to 40.
Okay.
And the longest was Sinister, which was tonight, which actually ran only about maybe like 10 minutes overtime. Should be about 65 minutes, and running at 73 was fine.
Yeah.
The show has always felt... long near the end, but that's the structure of the original movie.
Yeah, the structure of the movie kind of takes a weird turn.
Yeah.
It goes from one place to something else.
With the whole Mary Smith thing in the middle, yeah. And it's also because it's cobbled together from three or four different things. I think some of the Mary Smith stuff he was working on for something else.
And this was his last major picture, right?
Sinister was the last thing he did. And the first thing is it was the biggest money maker.
Okay. Really?
Which is just weird. I don't understand that, but yeah, because Urge was 59 or 60, and it was the last thing he directed. I don't think it had anything other to do with the fact that he was just constantly on the fringes and wasn't getting work,
right?
And seemed to be getting more work as a screenwriter at that point, so he just kept doing that because it was beer money.
Now, I'm sure you are an expert on Ed Wood at this point.
Pretty close, only because I've worked with so much of it and have to do the research every time, and I've spent so much time drowning in the material. I mean, you get to learn Ed's style pretty quickly. One of the shows that we've got in this, which is Hot Ice, has been contested. Like, well, is it really Ed? Is it not really Ed? And I've had to work with his material so often that within 10 minutes of the movie, I went, this is a script that Ed wrote that he had lying in a drawer from 20 years before, handed it to A.C. Stevens for beer money, and Stevens just had people ad-lib stuff around the sections that he couldn't finish.
Oh, wow.
And you can tell, like, Winford and Charlotte have these very Ed lines of dialogue. It's a very Ed plot where it seems just believable enough to be workable, but then falls apart into scrutiny, and you go, wait, that makes no sense at all. And then the other sections, yeah, I feel they're very sloppy. They're very obviously unrehearsed and improv, and it's obviously pretty decent actors who are trying to salvage something out of this thing.
Something that's maybe not quite salvageable.
Yeah, so
where did this start for you? Where did the whole putting Ed Wood on stage thing
for
you
start?
I
wanted to do it about 15 years ago when I was first starting to do Downtown Theater and thought it was sort of a dumb idea, and then I started working at NADA with Ian Hill, and God bless him, he mentioned that he wanted to do a great cinema for the stage series. And I was like, well, you know, I've always wanted to do Ed Wood. And it was like the light went on over both of our heads. We went, you know! And it took off from there. So the first time it was he and I together, you know, putting the thing together, because he wanted to do cinema on stage and I wanted to do Ed. And I maybe, because it's 15 years ago, I may have it reversed. Maybe he initially thought of Ed and I thought of cinema, but I think it was that way around. I think it was like, but it was a Reese's cup.
That is a great metaphor.
And immediately he was like, well, I really want to do Glen or Glenda because it totally fits his style. And he killed. We did Glen or Glenda the first festival, and it shouldn't have been as gorgeous as it was, but it was. It was gorgeous to look at.
Wow.
But yeah, we parceled it out to other directors we were working with because at the time it was NADA, which meant you had to keep material in it. All of us, Ian and I, and everybody else was working there at the time, was constantly putting material on stage to fill the house. So you couldn't do what I'm doing now with doing five shows at once because you didn't have the time. We were already doing five shows at once.
Right.
Whereas it's very different now, where instead of doing a one-person festival like this, is a little more feasible because this is the only thing I'm really doing right now. I'm not doing 50 different shows for 50 different people. But yeah, it started with that in 99, 2000. Then we did a whole Ed Fest in 2000 of all the five shows we were doing. And the only one that really repeats from this is Sinister Urge.
Okay.
Technically. Ian directed A Violent Years that first time out, and Brian Ink directed Bride of the Monster. But they were very different takes. Brian's was sort of like a spoofy camp thing, which was a lot of fun. And Ian, his Violent Years, he was much more interested in sort of like the visuals of the material. And he was trying to replicate some of that on stage with the weird montages and everything. And it was really interesting to look at. But I knew with me, it was like, okay, Bride, I always was like, this is Universal Horror movie. So we're doing it dead straight. We've done a dead straight universal horror. And what was funny was watching it tonight, and when the credits come up, and people were already laughing, and not laughing like, oh, and we're like, no, you're going this far with doing a universal logo, doing the whole, like, all the whole thing. The credits are in the right typeface. I went to enormous lengths trying to get the look right. And it was basing a lot off of the Black Cat. But first time out, we weren't really as worried about that as just getting material on stage one, and two, just having fun with it. But then the more I worked on it, the more I realized, like, it's really serious stuff going on here. This has to be taken seriously. And ever since then, I've sort of done funny, jokey Ed shows, but never had a chance to do something like this. I'm like, no, take the material, you know, seriously, treat it with some respect. And it's working. It's they're five very, very different shows.
And it works very nicely in contrast with Sinister Urge, which is much more of a play.
Yeah, and it's there's recommended pairings for these things, and there's a certain order that I try to consciously put them in, so that if someone wanted to just sit down and watch all of them in one sitting or whatever, like the last day we're calling Binge and Purge, you know, from 9:30 on Saturday until 10:30 the next night.
Oh, wow.
It's 24 hours of it, and they're in the order that they really should optimally be seen in. But I actually went to ridiculous lengths when I was first putting together, making sure that on the nights they match up, there'd be something thematic. And I think what works with Bride and Sinister tonight is Bride felt has this very sort of sad, tattered grandeur, and Sinister feels like this completely, like it's the early 90s New York feel of everything just coming apart, and everyone's constantly drunk and sweating.
There's a part of, I will, before I get into this, preface it with, I've never seen an Ed Wood film.
Really?
I'm familiar with the idea, of course, but I've never seen, I'm terrible with film.
It's actually more common than I'd expected. I've had so many people say, oh, I saw the Tim Burton movie. You know, I've never actually seen it. And I'm like, really? But then again, I'm old enough that I remember growing up turning on UHF channels, being bored on a Saturday afternoon and it's raining, and you turn it on and there's Bride of the Monster or there's Plan 9. You go, oh boy. And you just sort of, it was
there's
in,
my day.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. It was in the water. It was in, and you don't really have that anymore.
No.
The culture is so fragmented now, you don't have this collective shared sense of, there's only 10 channels. Well, one of them showing Robot Monster. Let's watch that.
I am old enough to remember that, but I have never seen an Ed Wood film. But that is to preface this with, it felt like part of the technical components of what you were doing, as like the red, cross out symbol. I don't know what that's called, like the red circle with the bar through it. When that would pop up when your video would start.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, that is, whether or not it's intentional, it's obviously purposeful.
Well, it's
in
not
a
the
weird
thing is,
way.
Yeah, no matter what goes wrong, so you go, well, it's Ed Wood. We're still having massive technical problems tonight.
That is not to point out, that is not in any way to say, like, well, you had some problems tonight, Frank.
Well, no, but the first thing is, yeah.
Augment the
they work.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually work for it. Yeah.
There were color bars that were coming up on the secondary monitor, and I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I was supposed to be watching something there, but whatever.
But it showed up over there. Yeah.
But it was, you. It's really interesting. This is to get me to the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is, you are taking film and putting it on stage. It used to be that we took everything from the stage and we put it on film.
Yeah.
And especially with Broadway, we've got Ghost, we've got Shrek, we've got Once, we've got just everything is now, if it's a successful film, we're going to put it on the stage.
Yes.
This is a different style of doing that. And what part of what was exciting about tonight was seeing the embrace of this is theater, especially with Sinister Urge, where you started with the cop who was in the previous piece eating popcorn and sucking on a Slurpee, and then commenting.
Yeah.
That's incredibly fun, and a really great commentary on, or at least that's how I took it, this great commentary on, like, remember when we used to, this was the other way
around.
Well,
a lot of it is also happy accents. A lot of the opening of Sinister has really only come in the last few days, and we've had, again, like, technical problems or things that didn't quite work out, and going, okay, here's how we're going to change this up, and it literally was like, okay, we're going to admit to the audience that that this show is just coming together at the last minute, that we're kind of under rehearsed. We're going to own up to it. So come out and just admit it and be sitting there like, oh, I'm supposed to be in that movie there. And it works. And again, because Kelton and Carson are the two through characters in every show.
They're in all five.
They're in all five.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the time you get to Hot Ice, which is the 80s ski comedy, Carson has become a roadie for a glam rocker, and Kelton is working as an assistant to an assistant to an assistant at a hotel. And you see how far they've fallen by the time you get to the 80s, and then finally the 80s, like Sinister Urge, they sort of come back and one last bit of grandeur.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it actually was a nice, happy accident to have that happen. as opposed to the way that it was originally running, was just that opening title would start and you have this elaborate dance going on between Dirk and the woman he's chasing. And I was like, we don't have time for this. Just you two go be funny and let's send Kelton out there and have him yell at the audience and it'll go like gangbusters. It's fine. And it worked. It worked beautifully.
It did indeed. Is that part of your work in any way? Like this idea of... do you do more stuff of taking film and putting it on stage? Is this...
Yeah, I do it a lot.
Okay.
I like looking for... And it sounds pretentious as hell, but I knew when 10, 15 years ago when I started doing this, I wanted to use alternative texts. I didn't want to just do the same stuff over, right. Which is perverse that I have an American Shakespeare factory that I'm doing Shakespeare. But it was a sense of like, okay, the classics are sort of... It's exhausted. It felt like theater was exhausted and no one wanted to go. Like you would say, I remember there's an episode of The Simpsons where Homer, I can never replicate it, where Homer Simpson has said, I'd rather go see a play, Mark. And he says the word play like he's saying feces or vomit. Like he's personally offended at the notion of going to a show. And that's the way most people are.
Right.
But, you know, it was like sort of from the get-go going, okay, I'm trying to reclaim that and make people want to go and see this stuff. And hopefully act as a gateway to go, oh, they're doing Ed Wood on stage and they dig that so much, maybe they'll go to see something like one of Ian's things at the Brick. Maybe they'll go to see a more experimental piece of Running Out of the Crane. Maybe they'll go see... That's the hope.
Yes.
They won't be terrified of going to see that stuff. Because I'm convinced if you raise the bar, people will hit it. So it really came from like, boy, I want to use alternative text and realize, you know, I should just go for broke and just do these things as films on stage. And the first one I did was I wrote this entire elaborate Hammer horror movie meets juvenile delinquent movie. And it was this insane 3-hour, like, Nicholas Nickleby of vampires. And it was nuts. It was insane. I would never attempt something like that again, but it was huge because it helped me tackle everything I wanted to do, figure out how to put a massive show together first time out.
And
it was
say,
just like,
yes, this is possible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was like diving in with both feet. It seriously was just going for broke from the get-go. There was no baby steps. It was just in.
Speaking of going for broke, your press release says this is called Final Curtain for a reason, not only in reference to the Ed Wood piece, but also
yes.
This is the last time you're going to do Ed Wood. Is that true?
It's the last time we're going to do it in New York.
Okay. What's next then?
Probably more Shakespeare.
Okay.
Our Bitch Macbeth, which is the other show that we're really known for, is like a signature thing, became a cult show. We do it every few years, and I want to tackle it again just because I adore that show, and we do it over and over again because like everything I do is in that show. It's 3 hours of like sex and violence and insanity and fight scenes and choreography and noise and stuff. And I really dearly want to do that again because I just adore the show and just want to tackle it again.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I want to do it for the last time again. I'll probably keep doing that show until like 70, and people are like, I'm sick of seeing it. And other than that, hopefully the Shakespeare's in there. I may finally do more original stuff again. I hate writing, but there's two or three types of shows I want to do that I just can't find scripts that'll support those themes, and I go,
so it's like, well,
fine,
then I guess I gotta do it.
I'm a playwright. I've always only ever a playwright by necessity. I just had a long period of time where I had shows that I sort of wanted to do and had no material to do. I said, okay, I'll write it. But I hate writing. I can do it, but I hate it. So if I can avoid it, I'm like, yeah, I really, it's such a pain in the ass. It's a miserable process. I'm just sitting there in front of the screen going, I just want to get to the room with the actors and work. I just want to
right.
get with the technical stuff and start playing with lights and noises. I don't want to be in some room banging on keys. It's annoying. It's boring.
So that sounds like that's where you really thrive. So you enjoy being in the room.
Yeah. And my two favorite parts of it are seeing it come together in a rehearsal room and helping the actors find the stuff and building it. And then the first night is in front of an audience. Because it's like, I mean, the thing that makes it, I never know what the show is until an audience sits down. I don't know what I have until
that's
an audience
true.
Is in front of them.
Yeah.
And as soon as they come in, it's not my room anymore, which is very exciting. It becomes their room, and suddenly the show takes on a whole different cast than it would have otherwise. And sometimes what you've built works, and you're guiding them through it, and it makes sense, and they got it. And other times, you just go, oh boy. And at that point, you have to admit, I blew it, and it's
oops.
Not them, it's me. I mean, there's some shows where it's them, but sometimes when it goes wrong, you go, yeah, no, it's not you, it's me. I just blew that. And then you go, hopefully you fix things, hopefully something you can repair. We did True last year, there were two or three things the first night that went, oh, this is not working at all. It was like three changes, and the next night, gangbusters, we never had another problem again. But again, you don't know until you're in front of an audience.
Right.
No way of knowing. And then you figure it out, and it's good. But yeah, this will be the last go-around for Ed. So if anybody's like read or heard anything of our Ed stuff, they've got to... This is it. It's the last chance they're going to get to see it in this city. It's just, it's not going to happen anymore.
So how much more time do they have? We're at the Red Room.
Yes.
And you're running
it's going to be until July 1st.
Okay.
It's running pretty much every night. We're doing this is like a screening night. We're doing, hopefully for the last night, if we can manage to get it organized. I still have to do that after, like, you know, every night of the past week. But yeah, every night there's going to be either at least one show, if not two. And on weekends, it's even days, you have four shows in a day. You can come see, you can purge, you can binge and purge, see two shows in the afternoon and two in the evening, and kill. And by the end, the actors will all be passing out exhausted. So yeah, it's only a week and a half. Excellent. Only four performances of each show. They're all limited editions, and one's already gone now, so he has to die one.
All right. Well, make sure I get the podcast up quickly then. So, thanks so much for. And actually, just so I get it right, how do I pronounce your name?
Shaviklik.
Shaviklik.
Polacks are, don't really quite understand the idea of a W. It's okay. They don't. It's okay.
Frank, thanks for hanging out, man.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks. Cool.
Thanks to Frank for staying late after cleanup and postponing the work he had to get done for the next night's shows. We all know the sleepless sacrifices that go into making theater, so it was much appreciated. Check out Final Curtain, The Last of Ed Wood, at The Red Room, 85 East 4th Street through July 1st. There are different pairings of shows each night and on the weekend afternoons as well, so check out dm-theatrics.com for a full festival listing. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please like it on Facebook at facebook.com/goseeashow. Follow at goseeashow on Twitter. Give a rating and a comment on iTunes. And send any comments, suggestions, praise, or complaints to me at Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, at goseeashowpodcast.com. Until next time, go see a show.
It's fun work, dude. Seriously.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
You.